seen it. But I don't know how the movie would be or whatever, but I have one thing for sure. Mike Newell is a hard worker, man. And such a great man. He really worked hard. And very focused. I've been under such a pressure because it was a long shooting under the worst conditions because it was 99% humidity on costume clothes. And he was really there, never lost it for a second.
He made a Harry Potter film, so he's been connected with complicated logistics.
He said that not as complicated as this one. The most complicated he has to face was this one.
They're rising up in horror for the Spanish-speaking world, but an Italian actress was cast.
No. Not I know. Not that I know.
She worked out well.
She did a great job. I think people is going to be beautifully surprised by her work.
But then you're in No Country for Old Men, you're playing a character of Eastern.
Doing great.
Yeah.
I think you came from below, but if it's...
No. We didn't know what to do. It's because it's like, okay, what do we choose? Where is he from? And yeah, well, I don't think he needs to be from anywhere, but we need to get rid of your Spanish accent because otherwise they will think of you as one of the Mexicans. And that's okay. Okay. So that's what we did, and I tried to get rid of that accent. And it was, I don't know if I did it or not, but
yes, you did.
Thank you. That's what I was hoping to hear. All. 182.
Okay.
I don't know how much is that in feet or inches. 182.
You look so huge on the feet. I mean, it's like almost a giant. You know? Real evil personified.
I'm sorry, here.
I can't wait for this. I thought it was, I always saw the character as a tree trunk. No matter how hard you hit, it doesn't bend. And I want the whole physicality of it to be big, because I want him to be clumsy. I don't want him to be comfortable with his body, but only the body, it's only a shelter for his perfectly straight soul. And I always thought of him like also somebody that is talking to you but has a headphone, hearing a soccer game, so he's here but he's in someplace else, so you don't know where he is. That soccer game could be God or fate or something that speaks. But that's something that I made for myself in order to understand this crazy guy, because he was like...
People who tend to engage him in conversation, thinking he's... by the sort of verbal, the sort of games he's playing with them. Except for the fat woman at the hotel.
Oh my God.
Oh, fantastic. Love that. And she's so Texan. Wow.
She should have come back at the end of the movie and she could have wiped her character up.
That day, we were cutting so much because I have a hysterical laughing. Because I said out loud, I found my wife. She's the only one can really deal with sugar. She was so good. And I lost it. I lost the character. I said, I don't know how to react to this. Then I realized I don't have the character. I wasn't as sure as I thought or confident in my character because I didn't know how to react, because she was improvising and she was going farther and farther. Like truly violent. I just say, cut, I don't know what to do, man. And then we're letting the camera roll to see how I would react. I said, man, I don't know how to react to this. She's so mean. Like, poor Sigurd. Can I have a beer?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Now, how would you like to work with the colors?
I went to Toronto Film Festival in 2001. For different titles. Then I met my friend, an agent. Yes, she's my friend, an agent. Elise searched, and she told me, who would you like to work with? I said, the Coens. I said, hey, that's not going to happen. Next. I said, I know what you mean. They do so deeply American movies. No, it's like a deep American kind of... when this thing happened, I didn't believe it. Because I truly said the coins beyond any other man. Beyond any other man. And I remember in that tour of Before Night Falls that once I went to New York to a radio station and the radio had a speaker. And in the hall of that radio, people will listen what you're saying on the radio. And there were only two people sitting down there, and they were both of them. And I spent the whole interview so nervous because I knew they were listening to me. And he asked me, who do you like to work with? And I didn't say the coins. I said, everybody else. I thought, well, I had the chance to say something, but anyway. So when they called me, I was truly, truly, truly amazed.
So they called you?
Joel called me, and I went to New York to talk to him. Both of them sit down in front of me and explain my character, and they were so funny. I said, I have to spend time with these guys. I mean, I was reluctant to the script because I have this problem with violence. I mean,
personally?
Yeah. I mean, personally and in movies. I've only done a movie this violent, which it was called Perita Durango in Spain, 96, with Alex de la Iglesia, director. And I don't like it. I have some problem with that. But I read the book and I saw what was underneath, and I thought if somebody can pull that out, it will be the coins. And I think they did that. And I think that I embody violence itself. It's the way I also choose to play that character. The lack of meaning, the lack of goals, the lack of circumstances, the lack of success of violence is totally shown here. And even though there's some people that think that violence is stopped by more violence, which only leads you to the worst case scenario and more pain and suffering, and there's a guy who's getting old saying this is unstoppable, this hasn't have any meaning. No, it's not, it comes, and it's like my character, comes out of nowhere and goes to nowhere, and in the meantime I destroy it. And I like that idea, and of course it's a violent movie, but I thought, well, there's something in there that the one who wants to see and hear it, he will. Maybe some others not, but I think there's something that is a huge, very visual and mentally critic to it.
Your violence is unstoppable. You go out in the dark of the night, you're left to hit again. You're left to cause more violence.
Yeah, it's like nothing hurts me.
No.
You can destroy it. It's like...
If this was a slightly different movie, be in the sequel.
Exactly, thank you.
They built a sequel around
that. I said that to them when I read the script. Am I going to be in the sequel, man?
No, but the scene with the cop.
That was a good scene, no?
The skid marks on the floor.
Yeah. When I saw that shot, I said, this is a coin movie, man. Oh, it's amazing. That shot. I love that shot.
I love that shot
and the shot of me watching my... After I see her,
yeah.
That's so brutal, no? Like, oh.
I like the filling station scene, the guy with the...
Yeah.
Because it went on for a bit. It wasn't too compressed. It went on for a good 3-4... I thought it was fascinating. That was my favorite.
I was scared with that. I mean, it was my second day of shooting. Mm-hmm. I said, okay. I only have one thing. And it's the second day. Let's go. But they were... One of the things that I think is amazing is that they are truly free. What I mean by this is, I don't know about this industry, I mean, I'm not. But I think that really, they really don't care about how things have to be made. They just want to do it on their own way, which I mean, we took a whole day to do that scene. And nobody, not for a second, was worried about time or anything. And I think it's not about money. I think it's about people knowing their way of doing things and knowing their way to reach and achieve those things, which is all the time of the world that we need. And until we get to that point where something insane, really insane, is happening here now. And it took me a while, but I would say that scene is not on me, it's on him. On his face, on his reaction, that you realize how dangerous I am. It's like when they said, when you play a king, don't play a king. Make sure that people treat you like a king and you'll be a king. When you play a bad guy, don't play a bad guy. People have to do that job for you. And he's perfect because he's like,
you know? No, you're you're like his Zen master in that scene, and he doesn't even know that he's in a class.
Yeah.
You're throwing back these questions.
Exactly. And I thought about what am I talking about in this scene, and I thought, okay, corruption. Like, I'm here, I'm on my way, and you want to get personal with me? If you want to get personal with me, then I need to have some information from you. He doesn't want to give that information, and then I come to a point where I said, you married into it, so you are not a clean person. You have something really bad inside. You have to be destroyed. It was this kind of thing that I put on myself that it won't help anybody else but me to understand what he's talking about, because not even myself knew. I said, what is all this about?
It also suggests that your character either hasn't been in the area, or maybe even in the country long enough to know that this is just how people business.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
Counterfeiting kind of intimacy.
Totally.
Or that you know you can invade him, you can make him feel uncomfortable by saying, who are you? What are you?
Yeah.
Prep guy probably never thought, my wife phone sets his business.
Yeah. Exactly.
One of the senses previous parts of this film.
Yeah, I think he's not. That's one thing that we discussed, because in the book it's smarter. In the book, there's more dialogue and more room to see how he navigates into his own thoughts. When here you have that scene and maybe the Woody Harrelson's thing scene and no more than that. So we want to put that a little bit away, because we don't have room to show that intelligent person.
Did you go back and
I guess what I try to do is to be always aware that there is something behind that person that I want to see. I want to see if he's clean, clean in the sense of purity, of he needs to be destroyed. But that's my own thing that I work on in order to understand why he's looking like that.
Did you go back and study old bad guys from film noir? Did you have any sort of role models of really bad guys that you wanted to portray?
No. You know what? I was impressed with, of course, Robert Mitchum in The Night of the Hunter. And I liked a lot, of course, Hannibal Lecter, but I liked a lot Kevin Spacey in Seven. And I don't know if you saw this movie, The Life of Others.
Yeah.
Amazing masterpiece, no?
Yeah.
The guy, he's not mean in the sense of chigger, but he has something in his eyes that when I saw, I said, that's what I wanted to do, fuck, and I didn't do. There's something there that it's completely weird to watch, no? Something that doesn't belong to rationality. Something that belongs to, I don't know how to get to you with that look.
Disturbing.
Not that I know, but Cormac McCarthy was on the set and said that Shigar is a name from the East, East Europe.
An Anton, certainly.
Yeah. And then I said, well, then we are wrong, because I'm not doing any East accent, and I'm not doing any East personality. So no, don't worry, it's something that came out of the blue for me, it helped me, but the character doesn't belong to anywhere, and it doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't have to be his actual name anyway.
What was it like having him on the set?
That day I didn't shoot. I was close to him, like, oh my god, but he saw my haircut. So you like it? I said, well, that's creepy. I love it. Apparently, he told me, Joel, that he saw the movie and he liked it.
You have a line of dialogue in the scene that the scene in the gas station, where you say it's a 1958 coin, this coin's been around for 22 years.
Yeah.
Okay, so that says it's 1980.
Yeah. It's the 80s. Yeah.
Okay. It's 1980.
Yeah.
The novel is not set in the
80s. I think it is.
What is it then?
He's like the 70s.
The Josh Brolin character is a Vietnam vet and he's young.
Right?
The Josh Brolin character is a Vietnam vet and he's young.
He's too young to be a Vietnam vet.